I'm Rob.
I'm E.
I'm Cavalier.
Slow motion cash money rain from the ceiling of the strip club. The pulse of it all still strange. The peel and paint job. The silver fox on the stage with the thick lip gloss. Wiping the pole right before she danced with the lint cloth. Lit sparklers. Waitress selling cores in a bucket. 87 winked at the blind. Held up a dub. Said check into the game. And why we came later explain. He'd rather do his thing far away from where his name ring. We the only brand that's Nubians in the spot. The soccer mom next to rock for the rednecks to gawk again. The spirit off. The mirrored walls right behind her reflect the flat screen monitors, which was giant. What came next, quiet as kept, was just a reminder of the game. Interrupted with the face of a minor that was executed. Can't refute it, only questions left already. Know the whys, just to guess who's next to prove the cop's not guilty. The op's not guilty. It's obvious, really, you get props if you kill me. It was sobering. Posing this, but knowing the answers. The other strippers threw bills at the lone black dancers. You all be singing in the rain till it all falls right. We be simmering in pain in the broad daylight. And yo, we're still the same shit, but don't feel the same. We live real like real estate.
Welcome to the next movement, folks. Cavalier, welcome to you. Thank you so much for being here. Really excited to talk to you.
Same, man. I appreciate y'all having me on. You know, I'm rocking whoever's rocking with me, man. Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons I'm glad to have a chance to talk to you has to do with a live show that I saw a couple of years ago. I guess it was a couple of years ago now. I mean, you just finished a run of live shows with Arm & Hammer, mm-hmm. but I had the chance to see you perform live when you and Quelle were on the Death Fame tour, and I had never seen you before, and I was blown away. And I think everybody else there was too. Like, it felt like the whole place was pulled right in. Just incredible energy. Seemingly a natural entertainer. Does it feel natural to you?
Man, that's a great question. You already, I was wondering how serious I was going to take myself on this. Does it feel natural to me? I don't know if the word is natural, but I'm most comfortable up there. Hmm. I'm more comfortable up there than I am at a rap show, right? Like, even if I attend a rap show, it's not that I don't want to see my colleagues perform. I actually love it, especially when it's artists like Quelle or Arm & Hammer that I'm close to, and I'm close to the music. But you know, maybe it's anxiety. I just that space, even talking about it right now, I'm like, oh man. Mm. Like, I'm very much as much attention as I may be commanding, knowingly or not. I like to be towards the wall with my medication, and I'm like more like that, right? Mm-hmm. But on stage, you can't really see anybody like that. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I rap alone in my bedroom. You know, my son sees me rap. I rap in the shower, you know? I sing in the shower. So on stage, I'm comfortable because I could feel the energy in the room. I could feel the people there, and I'm moving off that, but I'm alone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm.
That almost feels apparent in watching you perform. Mm. Well, speaking of Arm & Hammer, I mean, we have to mention the upcoming album that is mm-hmm. Due to be released on Backwoods.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people really anticipating this record, really looking forward to it, ourselves included. And I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about what led to this project being released on Backwoods.
Sure, man. Another great question. Well, I'm from New York originally, you know what I mean? And I think in any city, any community, when you're in a certain artist community or in that niche group, you become familiar with your peers, right? Or, you know, for whatever intents and purposes, whether you enjoy them or not, you are familiar with their existence. And Woods is someone who I've been aware of for a really long time, even before I got any significant entryway into making music and becoming an artist. I was aware of who Woods was. Mm. So there's that, right? And then now there's the point of me attempting to break out and be a creative, right? And you prove yourself and you move through the ranks or whatever you want to call it, but you put yourself out there in your artistic scene. And I think it's just homecoming, man. You know what I'm saying? In a lot of ways. I have never put out a record on a label before, ever, you know? And that may have made my journey a bit slower, but I also had a lot more control over things. And I think for those years, that was important to me. So when I was working on this record and looking for a home for it, I posed that to fans on Twitter, you know, just as a feeler. And quite honestly, I was looking to see if there was a pathway for me to have dialogue with certain labels. I wasn't sure how to approach that because I've been doing it on my own for so long. And Backwoods was one of those names that kept coming up. And I was like, that's actually, that makes a lot, you know, like that makes a lot of sense. And Quelle and I are close in real life. So, you know, I mentioned that to him and he had the same reaction. We were like, why didn't we think of that? It's kind of like, and it seemed like Woods had the same reaction, you know, like I think he saw that and was like, yeah, why? It just felt so natural, man. You know what I mean? And it's just homecoming in a lot of ways. I think the timing, even you know, I know Elucid from years ago. You know, they did an interview recently while on the road, and they were asking Woods and Elucid how they met. And I was just sitting there, you know, observing the interview. And I heard the story, and in my head, I was like, I might have been there that night. You know what I'm saying? So, in a lot of ways, it's just homecoming, and it feels really great because I feel like I'm in a place where people actually care about the success of my release, you know? And that's a big deal for me, especially for the first time doing something like this.
You mentioned Twitter a little bit ago, and I gotta tell you, every time I'm on there, people are just buzzing about you, like left and right. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow,
Yeah.
shit.
Yeah. And so the other day I saw that you were engaging folks and you asked them what producers they'd like to see you working with. And you got a lot of responses, naturally. And most of them weren't surprising ones, right? They were really popular producers that
No,
folks
or people
are,
that I know, you know,
yeah,
personally.
right, that people are always talking about on social media. I've heard you talk about wanting to partner with artists that people wouldn't expect you to.
Oh
And
yeah, man. Oh man.
it seems like it might be difficult to do this sometimes because as a creative, especially in this culture, you're placed in a box. And I'm wondering if you could talk about how that's impacted you as an artist and maybe name some of the ways that you felt like you've rebelled against this.
Wow, that's a man, y'all came with the real question. Okay, so because I guess the music people know me for tends to be in the headier spaces, right? And I'm caught, you know, I'm close affiliated with other artists who exist in the headier spaces or whatever you want to call it. I do personally think that some of these artists, the diversity of what they do is overlooked. For example, Akwele, right? Like people kind of acknowledge it, but I really don't think they understand the scope of what Quelle is capable of creatively, you know? And a lot of us, particularly he and I, why this, any, well, to answer your question first, I think because of what maybe people have heard and expect from me, when I'm contacted for collaborations, it often tends to be for headier type of stuff. Like when an artist has like, yeah, I got this introspective deep shit, I'm gonna send it to Cav, you know? And I'm like, I'm in a really niggerish mood right now. Maybe I want to rap about, you know, big bags of weed, you know? And I do rap about that stuff, right? So I think there's that dynamic, which I don't mind, right? Because it helps challenge me as a writer. At the same time, I think people don't realize where I'm willing to go. So there's a little bit of that, you know. Yeah, that's I think I don't know if I rebel against that per se, but I aim to. Now, mind you, I make heady music as well. It's not like that's so foreign, you know, but sometimes I don't, you know. So I don't know. In terms of collaborations, I think what makes hip hop really interesting at times is when we see pairings that we didn't anticipate all the time, you know. And I also think that works musically, right? Like when you take an artist, like let's say like Rick Ross, and he's rhyming about crime on these beautifully sweeping, sweetened, scapey beats that you might expect to hear Erykah Badu sing on, right? And I think that's part of the appeal, you know? So I'm looking often for that mix, like that rough and that smooth, you know? Or like something that was very dense but went down easy. Like I'm constantly looking for that. The blend of things that are seemingly disparate, but when you experienced it, made a lot of sense as a dish, you know? So yeah. I hope that answers the question, but
it does. It does. Yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. And I agree with you, about Quelle Chris. I think mm-hmm. people underestimate him. He's so talented. And I wanted to ask about the most recent collab you did with him, Black Cottonwood. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like this was an exclusive release in 2022, and then mm-hmm. it became available generally in 2023. You dropped that at the end of last year for everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting. So I hadn't read the liner notes on Bandcamp. I hadn't saw the videos for Broad Daylight or Purple Robes. When I listened to this, I went in blindly and I was listening and I was just like, man, I was just like, this sounds like a collage of sounds from different eras and platforms. And then I read the liner notes and then I watched those videos and I was like, well, damn, like that's exactly like those videos are recorded that way. They're like mm-hmm. old VHS tape footage. Like that's the way, that's the style in which they're recorded. Mm-hmm. And then on the liner notes, you say like, this is a, you know, celebration of sounds.
Yeah.
So that was just so funny because you can totally feel that in the project without knowing any of that. I'm wondering, when you and Quelle were putting this project together, how did this specific type of production and the structure of the project inform your lyricism and delivery?
Kismet.
Mm.
I've told this story before. I don't know if I've told it officially anywhere that like is so accessible to people. And hopefully as people continue to explore that project, this doesn't become, you know, a redundant point, but Quelle and I didn't plan to make Black Cottonwood. It's completely, completely just a moment of giving. We gave into the moment of inspiration, right? Quelle and I are the types, and we're not the only ones amongst each other that are like this, but I would make something, and you know, I'm in my office right now, my creative space. I would make something here if no one knew about it. You know what I mean? And it would gnaw at me and I would continue to make that or make other things, whether it's a song, whether it's raps, whether it's a hoodie, you know, a zine, something. I'm just going to make things, you know, and it gnaws, that itch gnaws at me. And I know Quelle, for lack of a better verb, suffers from that as well. Mm. That's part of our friendship. That's part of our brotherhood. So we've been through that before. When he did his first record with Mellow Music, Niggas Is Men, it came about the same way. I don't think the label knew that he was going to submit an album that featured another artist on almost every song. You know, I don't even know if I was on Mellow Music's radar like that. And that was such a gift that Quelle gave me, you know, by allowing me to be co-pilot, so to speak, on his Mellow Music debut. You know, what a gamble, you know. And that record put me on a lot of radar. So that process has been cornerstone in our friendship for the better, you know, for 10 years now, right? And because we're now like in the 10-year period since Niggas Is Men came out. So that being said, I couldn't tell you where it all came from. We, you know, Quelle, we made that record, like the beats, the rhymes, the photographs, even the website I launched it off, we made all that entire project in under 80 hours. Mm. You know, we were like taking shifts at one point. You know, I went to Quelle's house to work on other things. We had no idea we were going to make this at all. And then we just hit this rhythm. It'd be like 3 o'clock in the morning. He'd be working on a beat. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to go lay down and I'm going to wake up. And I would wake up, let's say like six on purpose, and he'd be asleep. But the beat would be there and I'm gonna finish the first verse. Then he would wake up and I'd be like, I got this now. It was kind of like, it started to get like that. You wow. know, we take a break and walk to Whole Foods and I get a couple of ginger shots and we back at it, you know? And I love doing that with my brother. So it just happened like that. And right before getting on the plane, I was like, oh, I know we're gonna take some photos. Like I took those photos of us. You know what I mean? I went and took a walk and took the other photos that are not of us. That's like in Quelle's neighborhood, you know? That's how authentic it is. And I think that's what's coming across. And I couldn't be happier because it's just honest. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Kev, in the intro to Black Cottonwood, whose voice are we hearing?
So that's this brother named Merc, Mercury, or AKA Merc the Maroon. That's like my OG, you know, and my life has this knack of going full circle, right? The very first studio that gave me an opportunity, the first collective of homies to that gave me a space to hone myself and be vulnerable enough to learn about my craft was spearheaded by Merck. You know, that's like my big bro, OG. And he started a studio in Brooklyn called The Dugout. And a lot of people came there to record. The Dugout was also synonymous with our collective. We booked performances like that. When I was getting my feet wet, I had no recorded material, had no music out, but that was the space that gave me my start. And full circle, you know, Merck now works and lives in Baltimore with his family. He's a key figure in the Baltimore school system and happened to, on his career pathway, meet Quelle's brother, Moselle. Then Quelle and a lot of his family relocated to the Baltimore area.
Right.
And, you know, when I learned that Moselle, Quelle's younger brother, had linked with my OG figurative big brother, I was already like, wow, that's weird. Because I used to tell Merck, I was like, man, I met my soul brother, like Quelle. Like, he would have been with us in the dugout had we been from another city. That's kind of how I used to talk about Quelle. Mm. And now here we are. So when he heard I was at Q's crib recording, I hadn't seen him in a while in person in quite some time. He said, I'm going to pull up on y'all. And he, obviously, he knows Quelle now.
Right.
And he did. And we were like, yo, we making this. And you about to be on it. Like, he didn't even know. He didn't know because we didn't know. We didn't know we were making and what we were making. He came to catch up with me and us. And we were like, yeah, you about to get on this. And he literally just said that. And we were like, cool, that's the intro.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't even know you were recording, right? I mean, he says,
not really,
that,
nah.
Says that in the intro. Well,
yeah.
The other thing he says in the intro that kind of caught my attention, well, he's basically just encouraging you and Quelle to like be patient with your audience, saying like they might not get it right away. This might go over their heads. Folks need time to realize its greatness. You've been doing this for some time though. And I've just been thinking about how it's been a long time, few years, since your previous release between Private Stock and What's Coming. And I'm wondering, like, what keeps you in this? I mean, you talked about this like gnawing feeling as an artist, but like rap music specifically, what keeps you in it?
Yeah, you know, more and more as I approach the release of this project, I'm going to have to more speak on the vulnerabilities of the space that led to it. And my peers have gone on to execute prolific runs artistically, right? And I think some fans, even myself, it may have appeared that I was just a great guest star in your favorite feature film. You know what I'm saying? Behind the scenes, that may not have been a reflection of the work I put in or the caliber of work that I put in. At the same time, this is an industry that you're only as great as your latest thing, right? And Private Stock came out and it's the most, I guess, forward-facing success that I, like the most kind of like commercial press and things like that, that I ever received on a record. And I hit a space of frustration actually after that, actually. You know, it became kind of a thing like I would, you know, it opened the door. I found out like people I idolized and legends in the game were listening to my record, but I didn't know if the masses were. Like the discoverability of me doing what I can on my own is affected, right? Like it's not like I'm having label support. And I wasn't upset about that, but it's just a different journey. And it then became a space afterwards where they're like, all right, that was amazing. Do it again. You know what I mean? Which is cool. But I, you know, in the year afterward, or about a year after Private Stock, I found out less than a year that I was becoming a dad. And next thing you know, it was like the pandemic. And I started to hit a space where I was like, I'm not sure if I agree with how this is set up. I got to bleed the stone on command to prove my worth, like as an artist. Something wasn't adding up for me. And I think that got into my head a bit. So it wasn't that I wasn't recording, you know, I just wanted it to be special. I wanted it to mean something. That's kind of haunted me, or I don't know if haunted is the word, but that's been an issue with me my entire journey. It's why I haven't put out as many releases. So, you know, after Private Stock came out, I released vaulted material to my fans, right? People knew about Lemonade. More people knew about Private Stock. I put out Lemonade Redux, and I think that may have gone over some people like it was just here's my project again. But I took an EP and turned it into an LP. Right. I added a whole nother EP's worth of songs to that EP, right? Including more visuals. I released a lot of visuals. I create multimedia. Like, people are just now discovering that I'm behind all of these visuals, that they're like, yo, those are really great. Who's doing that? I am. Yeah. You know, not completely by myself, obviously, but I write all of that. You know, I direct and produce all of that. And it takes time. So I think I had to realign with what I thought was a rhythm I was comfortable with and reconnect with why I felt joy in doing it, because it was starting to get muddled, especially the first couple years of the pandemic. I was kind of like, there's no difference between Spotify and OnlyFans. I wanted to make sure if I'm hoeing, I'm hoeing for my reasons. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned private stock, because I wanted to ask about Open Season as it relates to your delivery.
Out in the open, baby. That's how they doing it. So that's how I'm doing it. Yo, they hunting out in the open. I'm puffing out in the open, baby. It come to me, I'm thugging out in the open. They want it out in the open, baby. I see the beast, they gunning out in the open. Say fuck them out in the open, baby. I puff the weed in public out in the open. They hunt us. I'm thinking about the next 30 years, how to turn my prayers into cheers without the wear and tear, weary tears. Bandoleros like calf, how you get so brolic? Will the weed hydroponic? Depend on hydraulics. See iconic be the sign of the comet. The fall catastrophic. The CD hot out the burner, so we drop it in your poetry. It's caca. My written on the walls, my cucarachas. It's pissing on the stoop by your zapatas. Silo beam, high flying, piloting with winos. You listen to pilot. Politicians. So what the fuck do I know? This defiance, not survival. The posture, the hostage. That turn away that bread and cheese for you to break salat with. Try it, dog. Got the Tylenol and final call with bean pies. Not the Adderalls, got Dragon Ball Z. Sleep time. Told you got the juice. Freeze dry. Marmalade for these pigs too. This that karma crazy, baby. Streamline.
I've heard you refer to your style of rap as observational. Mm-hmm. And I recently listened to the opening lyrics of the song Open Season, and it made me wonder if this approach goes beyond offering a wider perspective. On the song, you say, out here in the open, baby, that's how they doing it, so that's how I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. When I heard this, I thought about conversations that I've previously had with folks around protesting injustices, mm-hmm. and how this is not a monolithic effort. Every action doesn't look the same, and we do what we can with the tools that we've got. So in that light, do you think of your artistry as this type of vehicle?
I can't say I consciously did, or not in the beginning. I believe that as long as I'm staying true to myself, then that's the most effective thing that I can do. And I do care about these issues and these things. I mean, I have been kidnapped by the police, like literally, you know what I'm saying? Mm. It's addressed on private stock. And I don't have an issue with anyone's means of processing, dismantling, compartmentalizing, however they're dealing with that. My stance was simply, it's very clear that this is an open assault, spiritually, physically, metaphysically. It's so apparent that now we can hide these things, or they don't even have to be hidden. They're in broad plain view. That was where I was coming from. Around the time when I initially wrote that record, there was any number of names that I could name on this long list of people who had been martyred, you know, and by law enforcement, among other things, though, you know, not just the surface level that we kind of see on timelines about Black men getting murdered, which is wild that I could say that as a sentence. And we're kind of just like, word, that happens. We watch Black men get murdered on clips on our phones, and then we go to work. Hmm. But it's also the open assault, the warfare, like it's on TV, it's everywhere. And yeah. it's so, maybe that's my issue. Like I'm seeing, I guess, what the system thinks they're hiding. I don't think they're hiding anything, actually. That's what I mean. No. Like they're not hiding anything. They're not even hiding it. That's actually part of the magic. If you study magic, there's a part of it that has to remain in plain view for it to be effective. You know what I'm saying? So I was just like, all right, you know, in my mind, I'm not a criminal. So because I'm not a criminal, I could smoke weed in public because I'm not a criminal.
Yeah.
Your law may say something, and it's not that I don't respect the law, but I am not a criminal or who, you know, on the documents, they'd be like the driver or, you know what I'm saying? I have a name. So I'm not the driver, you know, the defendant or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, fuck that shit. I'm smoking weed right here. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I've smoked weed in places, many places that you probably never would have ever seen somebody smoke weed before, you know? But that's kind of how that started. I didn't intend. But then during the pandemic, as the BLM protests and these things started to hit a surge, there was a resurgence in my music. There was, you know, I sold out of the vinyl for private stock 2 years after it came out. And I think that was a big factor.
Yeah, I got to tell you, like, music like this is what got me through, you know? Mm. So I think you're saying that it wasn't conscious, like you sort of using this as a platform.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people like me found it and mm-hmm. speaks to why the vinyl sold out, because people were looking for that.
Yeah, I appreciate that, really.
You were just talking about smoking weed, like, openly. I wanted to ask you about Bring Back Weed Spots, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's familiar with Private Stock knows the track Reprise and where that lyric comes from, Bring Back Weed Spots. And then last year, you released a line of hoodies with the phrase stitched on them. And I just think this was like a brilliant and provocative way to create a conversation around gentrification and appropriation and mass incarceration. As I've heard you say or saw you write, you know, it's just kind of wild how a switch got flipped. And then overnight, like, certain state and local governments act like lives haven't been ruined by irrational enforcement for decades, all in the name of money. On the website for the merch, you call for an acknowledgement of the mass incarceration of members of your community. And I wanted to ask you what that actually looks like for you in practice.
Well, what mass incarceration looks like to me?
What the acknowledgement of the mass incarceration looks like.
That's a great question. I think the acknowledgement is there's a gap between people wanting to have some connection or empathy or understanding of these crises in our communities and how it relates to their small, seemingly small, individual daily choices.
Mm.
And that's why I can make it something about as simple as weed, because we've all been having access to weed for quite some time. You know what I'm saying? Our parents, all of that, right?
Yeah.
So its presence is not, it's not like, right? So at the same time, now as we have more and more gained access to it, it's almost like we flippantly forgot. We forgot about the draconian drug laws. We forgot about the lives ruined. Now, I don't expect us to walk around in collective guilt, but I do think we should walk around in collective responsibility, right? Not doing so sets us up for further measures that are against the culture of cannabis or against the culture of community even. I think we're opening ourselves up to a different way of it being policed. You know, it's that's why I'd be like black market forever, man. You know, it doesn't mean I wouldn't go to a dispensary when I've gone to dispensaries, right? But now what's happening, we're dealing with like the Monsanto weed now, you know? The more I got into the campaign for Bring Back Weed Spots, the more the diversity of my network revealed awful things about the behind the scenes of the cannabis industry. Things that I wasn't even able to so comfortably and plainly state in the public domain, but that it made me wish our communities were more informed. And I don't have all of the answers, but I do know that we need to begin making wise choices in our cannabis usage, the same way we do our dietary choices or anything else, you know, because it's that real. And I just seen an article last week talking about high levels of toxic metals in commercial grade marijuana. But if you're on the industry side of it, we've been through that. You know what I'm saying? And then also just watching my city change. It went from mass incarceration to now, like, it's like, we treating weed like it's crack now. It's acting crazy. We acting crazy now. Like, it's like, it's not, yo, man, what's going on? It's just so many levels. No one could have ever expected, honestly.
Yeah.
And even this, the branding, just what it's become, it's very interesting. I think things like gentrification, we don't plan all the way through. There was an aspect of city planning, right? That's a whole study in a whole field. But now we're doing development, both literally in terms of like how we develop a city, but also how we develop a brand and a product. And they're based on like a very consumptionist first kind of like approach. So the longevity or the meaningfulness of things becomes watered down.
Yeah. Have you been encouraged by the discourse that Bring Back Weed Spots has inspired?
Oh, yeah. I just am still finding my way on what I could do about it. I'm about to drop another round of hoodies. They seem to be interested in that, and that's cool. Mm-hmm. I would like for it to still be not just a conversational piece, but also I do believe in tangible things. I think that helps trigger the decision-making processes that I'm talking about. But I'm not going to pretend I have all the answers. So I'm using that as a vehicle to gather information and interest as my platform broadens. Hopefully those things can co-align. You know, I would love to be an access point for farmers with integrity to be able to meet an audience who wants quality cannabis, you know?
Yeah.
I just heard you use the words, my city. And I'm assuming, I know you don't live there. At least I don't think you live there anymore, but I'm assuming you were talking about Brooklyn.
Yes, I was talking about Brooklyn. Yeah.
Yeah.
I reside in New Orleans.
Yeah, yeah. So I love the video that you did for Go Brooklyn.
Oh, thank you.
You were talking about visuals earlier, and it just is shot so beautifully. Throughout the song, it feels like you're both celebrating and memorializing your city. You're reflecting on your history with Brooklyn and naming how the city's changed. And at one point in the video, you say, we're just out here representing for the culture. We're breaking your heart. We're breaking your heart. This is another song where I think you're offering this observational perspective, but how much of Go Brooklyn was also about processing your own heartache around gentrification and other things that have negatively impacted the city and its culture?
Oh, all of it. All of it. Well, it's also, so Go Brooklyn ever so subtly uses the sample from Audio 2 with Milk. In the song, they're going, go Brooklyn, Brooklyn, go Brooklyn, Brooklyn, right? Mm-hmm. But that's in Reprise as well. You know what I'm saying? And one of the first songs I ever made, ever, shout outs to Daru Jones, legendary drummer and producer Daru Jones gave me some of my first beats ever, you know, which is super encouraging, right? Especially when you realize the legacy of his work. And in that song, he used a similar sample from like an MC Light song. She's talking about Brooklyn. She's like, you know the place, you know the place, right? So I feel like odes to Brooklyn, I've been making them. I've been trying to make, you know what I mean? It's like a song I've been trying to make my whole life, you know? And that's why Reprise and Go Brooklyn is on the same record. That's why they're so close together in the record.
Yeah.
But with Go Brooklyn, whereas like Reprise is also wrapped into other personal experiences, Go Brooklyn is a bit more broad and is a pastiche almost of things that when you shuffle through them again, they're all dense images about Brooklyn. Like I probably have the most Black culture references in that song. Hmm. There's so many. Like if you mind them, there's so many. You know, I talk about Radio Raheem, but he died that year. So that's how meta that was. That's why I had to shout him out. You know what I mean? He dies in the movie, in Spike Lee's movie. And then he died in real life when I made Go Brooklyn. So I kind of like had to immortal, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, you know, I start that record out. I was bumping Rob Bass, was too young to know about Easy Rock. And that's a play on, not, I was too young to know about the crack epidemic though it was happening. But it's also, that's the first rap song I memorized ever. You know what I'm saying? Well, It Takes Two by Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock. So I start there, you know, because it's for me, that's the childhood anchor that I can, something that I can remember and tell a story about as a kid, right? And then just layering on top of that, the various things that Brooklyn kind of felt like. So that's, I guess that's a large part of what that song was for me.
I could hear, I'm not from Brooklyn, but I could hear like the cultural references to the city, but also cultural references to the Black community. Like it's, yes, it's all in there. And it really is intertwined nicely. Yeah, it's just, it's a beautiful song. It's a beautiful video. And shout out to Pink Sifu. I saw him floating around in there and it was a nice surprise.
Yeah, him and Liv. They're both in there.
Oh, okay.
That's Liv on my left and that's Pink Sifu on my right.
Okay.
But you just said she got, you know, the shades on.
Yeah.
But that's Liv. Okay. You know what I mean? She's in there too, you know, and those are people I know in real life. And I dressed everybody. They all got on my polo.
Oh, word.
Minus okay. like one person. All of those clothes are mine.
I love that.
Yeah.
Switching gears a little bit. So you've frequently collaborated with singer and producer Iman Amari and have talked about how important this work and relationship has been to you and your artistry. And describing the work that you two did together on Private Stock and how Iman has affected your delivery, you've said, it's the environment, making me pay attention to things like timing differently or phrasing, like how a jazz musician would. When you think about your relationship with producers outside of Iman, do you want them to be able to provide you with a similar space that really allows for your growth as an MC?
Sure, of course. That's the beauty of working with an actual producer, right? You're getting not just someone giving you a palette, but assisting you in creating a world. And also they have a different perspective in the vision that allows you to get the best, you know, to bring the best out of you as an artist, right? It's almost like the relationship between the director and the lead actor of a film, right? And the better the lead actor and the director are, the best they're going to get out of each other. You know what I mean? And that's very similar to the relationship, especially when you're working on a record. That's like mostly one producer, you know, it starts to become a lot of ways a conversation, or, you know, there's a lot of things happening there. So
yeah,
that definitely occurred with a lot of those records.
In preparing for this interview, I came across a journal entry on your website entitled, "I Got Her Name Tattooed on My Chest." You were writing about your grief specifically connected to the loss of a friend named Amy, whose poem and name you have tattooed on your chest. And one, I really appreciated your openness in this entry. And one of the things that stuck with me was just the isolation and connection that comes with grief. You being in New Orleans with your grief, wondering if the people sitting next to you may have also known Amy. And the direct message years later from a stranger who spoke to you at her memorial.
Yeah.
And grief has certainly and naturally found its way into your music. Black Cottonwood is described as death, rebirth, repeat. When you're writing about grief in your music, do you consider the way that it might make listeners feel connected to others or you in their grief?
Not so specifically that, as much as my aim with any of the music is that it's emotive in a way that is sincere, and that the hallmark of connectivity would be when someone connects with the record, even if they don't know what I'm talking about specifically, because there's a lot of things that I'll put on a record that only my homie so-and-so knows about. Like he knew that was for him.
Yeah.
And it's on a record that's on Spotify, right? But that one line about that thing, that was for him because I was talking to him. Like even on records like Lemonade or Private Stock or a lot of the records that I put out, people hear these sounds, these recordings, these conversations, and they think they're things that were downloaded and they're not. I was just telling a producer that yesterday. And those are people that are talking to me, you know, in most instances, it's a recording of someone talking to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that it's so consciously a thought in the process as much as it's an aspiration to make things that are resonating with people in a real way. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes it more timeless, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
When you did the artist spotlight on Apex last year, you talked a lot about trauma and how confronting this is part of being Black in America. Mm-hmm. And creating art has allowed for the opportunity to heal this trauma and put it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And then you go on to say that people in your life didn't have the same opportunity and where they put their trauma didn't serve them.
No.
Do you think part of you tries to intentionally hold space in your work for the folks who don't have a similar outlet to process their pain by offering yours?
Yeah, again, I can't say that it's intentional, but maybe it's subconscious. Mm-hmm. Well, let me rephrase that. There is intention in the music I make, absolutely. I am intentional, right? So I'm hoping that in being that intentional, it's resonating, you know, at a certain frequency for people that they can tap in. One thing I've noticed over the last about 5-6 years, particularly when I did work with Iman Omari, we would receive a lot of messages from people in very unique situations. Hmm. We received a message from a brother who was parked outside of a store he was about to rob, you know, with his firearm, you know, and he turned on a song, I guess, that Iman made or something like that. And for that night, at least, decided to not go through with it. But when I tell you that, I don't know, you know, for me, it's felt like we received a unique amount of messages and call outs in that way. Hmm. Right. There was a brother that attempted to intern with us, and we learned like midway through that he was unhoused. You know what I mean? I'm like, how's he even commute? How's he getting wife? You know what I'm saying? Like, he like edited a video and sent it to us. I was like, how's he even doing this?
Yeah.
Right. So something in what we were cooking up was giving something to people to hold on to. What to do with that, I can't say I always know, but I was grateful that that was happening. You know, I'm not killing nobody in my music. Not really. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, you know, people talk about like, yo, low vibrational this and that. I don't get too much into that conversation, but I do know that we were putting real things and real feelings in, and we were doing our best to transmute our own pain when we made the music. So if some people, if that was helping them in that way, that's kind of almost all we could ask for.
Yeah, I don't know if this is intentional either, but it feels like to me you're encouraging folks to find a healthier way to address traumatic experiences.
Yeah, and myself too. Cause I'm still going through it. Like, I'm going through it today. Like, sure. For real. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Like, I, man, you know, if heads only knew, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it just doesn't end.
Yeah.
Right. And I think now I just have a better grip on understanding that, you know, the world is going to keep, you know, there's always something, and it's your duty to be in tune with the choices you're going to make in response to that.
Yeah.
So the music is something. I it ain't hurting me, you know, it's something. And I've watched literal alchemy happen off this shit. You know, like I was telling someone today even that we've been commended for making miracles happen, in the sense that a lot of people don't earn a living off of something they thought about in their mind, that they decided to say out their mouth or anything like that, you know?
Yeah.
So the fact that anyone cares is kind of a miracle for real, you know? And yeah, that shit is just something that I mill over about a lot. So yeah, you know, what do you do with that? You know, so it's like, it's, I guess it's like an attempt to, you know, lead by example, man. You know what I'm saying? It's like that, sure. Right? Like, okay, I got trauma too. You know, what are we going to do now? Am I going to replay it on my child and shit? Or hopefully I can do these things. And then when I'm gone, even like, you know, if he needed to hear that, he could know like, well, this is what my father chose to do with it.
Yeah.
You know,
thanks for sharing those answers and those stories.
Appreciate you. Yo, thank you.
Yeah. So in the same interview you did with Apex, the interviewer asked you to name your favorite project from the bodies of work that you've created thus far. And you said, haven't made it yet. It's not that I don't love the work that we've done. I feel like I have so much more that I want to give to the world before I leave it. Where does your upcoming project fit in this narrative? Do you think it has the potential to become this for you and the people who engage with it?
TBD, man. one thing I'm hoping doesn't affect the record is people expecting it to be private stock again or something, right?
Right.
I definitely love the space to let it be its own thing, right? Like, you know, we don't expect Steven Spielberg to make the same movie every time. Why should, and for me, the albums are movies, man, straight up. Like, mm-hmm. I create, you know, visually and auditory anyway. Even when I'm writing a verse, I'm seeing it. I'm hearing it, but I'm kind of seeing it, you know? So there's that. I'm hoping that it has the grace. People give it the grace for it to be its own thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to hear that people are excited about it. I hope that they just are open for what it's going to be as opposed to what they think it might be. Mm-hmm. You know, I seen a video recently circulating. Shout outs to Eloquent. I think he reposted it on Twitter, and it was like a young woman saying, if you're coming out with a record this year, it don't got to be 20 tracks. Keep it, you know, some set of rules.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, good thing I did the opposite of that. This album's 21. It's 21 tracks. You know what I'm saying? Everyone's like, oh, you didn't put an album out in a while. I'm like, okay, cool. I just gave y'all here's an hour's worth of music, yo. You know what I'm saying? And I got other records coming out this year. So let's see how genuine this response is. You know, let's see now. Like, there's a few records slated for me right now, you know? Mm-hmm. If it's about like making a little Wayne type of run to justify your value, you know, stay tuned. You know, you don't have to, now it's like, okay, I waited 5 years for a record. I'm like, all right, are you going to be ready when I drop one? That's long. And then 5 months later, you might see another record. And then 5 months later, you know, are you ready for that? Mm-hmm. Let's see, you know, and I don't make microwave meals, you know, so let's see, you know, let's do that and see how real it is, you know, but I hope this record can create the response that I know it deserves, that I feel like is in tune with the work that went into it, all the people that put time into it. I hope so, you know, so yeah. I really do. So, but in terms of it being my favorite, I don't even know. There's components that are still happening right now, even. I haven't even shed too much light on the fact that this record is like also audio visual. Mm. Like there's a visual for almost every song. You know, we're still working out how to even dispense that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm in a space where I'm like, I've been in a lot of brushes where larger artists have sampled the soup that I'm making. So I'm like, I'm gonna make it at this concentration, and let's see what happens now. You know, I didn't have $1 million budget for this record, or none of them, but I've had $1 million niggas take ideas from me. So it's like, all right, can you, you know, let's do this now.
Yeah,
that sounds incredible. I cannot wait for this to drop.
I was gonna say, if you weren't excited for the record before, I hope you are now.
I hope so, man. They're gonna be like, this is trash. Motherfucker. You know, some dude on that same tweet where you like, I asked people like, who do you want to hear me on?
Yeah.
And I got all this positive feedback. And this one cat was like, who are you? Mm. You know what I'm saying? But I felt them. So I was like, yo, what do you want to know? Like, what's up? And they didn't respond. Uh-huh. So I'm like, see, that's that corny shit. I guess it was, to me, it was a valid question. Somehow that my tweet got on their feed though. So I was like, this is interesting. I found interest in that. I thought that was one of the more interesting responses personally. So that's why I engaged it. I didn't engage it antagonistically. I was like, yeah. I took it as an opportunity. Like, yo, if you really cute, cause I would entertain that. They could have watched something and been like, that shit is whack. It ain't for me. And I'd have been like, word. All right. At least you know what it is. Instead, now you would have been a troll if you were saying I was whacking her nothing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, woo, sure. You're nicer than me. Say that.
long work in progress. Trust me.
I was gonna say he was probably just thrown off by the sincerity of your reply, not something people are used to on Twitter. I think.
No. Yeah.
All right. We've asked a lot of serious questions. We've had a serious conversation, which I have greatly appreciated. But we're gonna switch things up. And maybe we'll have another serious conversation. I don't know. But we're going to switch things up and we're going to talk about Wu-Tang and we're going to talk about the W.
Wait, hold up, chill. What's that, son? Damn, nigga got fucked. Shit, huh? Rise back, watch nigga run. Seven the center of your 8-point sun. Hold tight, grip on the guard, you. Now you best be careful. can't dodge two selfies, and that's your dome piece. Father UCK police. Something in the slum with rum pa pum pum. Something in the slum with rum pa pum pum.
Yo, Ray, it's been a long time, son, since we bust gun clad glaciers, ran the world and snatched paper. Return to the 36th chamber. Proceed with caution as you enter. We have an APB on an MC killer. Looks like the work of a master. Master.
Yo, something in the street went bang bang. Making it hard for you to do your thing. Bang. Something in the street went bang bang. Up in the force game, wildin' money to grabs. I ain't fucking with crabs. Out of state, cop two labs. Hop two cabs, back on the ad. Stab you with the vocab. Catch me at the big dough rehab. Trying to re-up, keep my feet up. Snake niggas in the cut, hold the pride up. Time is up, no luck, heat start to bust. Niggas you can't trust, dealing with lust. Seen them at the ball games with James.
Fuck yeah. Wu-Tang, baby.
Every episode of The Next Movement, we ask our guests to pick an album that is either a personal classic, a favorite, something that's been influential maybe, and we have a little discussion about it. So tonight we're talking about Wu-Tang, we're talking about the W.
Mm-hmm.
And Kev, I know initially you were like, oh man, you guys have covered a lot of great albums, so yeah. It seemed like it was a bit difficult to land on something, but what led you to the W?
It was just tough, man. I started going through the list. I was like, damn, everybody talked about the albums I would really talk about already. And I guess maybe I was being too superficial. Like maybe they were easy grabs and that's why they were taken. So I had to think about a record that I actually listened to. I didn't want to be fake. And there's definitely a lot of records that I haven't listened to either that I know are pinnacle records in hip hop and that I probably should, you know, brush up on, and they're in the canon and all of that. But I actually listened to the W. And when I saw that that was one of the Wu-Tang records that wasn't covered, I was kind of like, I might need to talk about this because it might be the most slept on Wu-Tang record.
Mm.
It might be.
Yeah, I feel like there are strong opinions about this record. But before we dive into that, in general, like, how would you describe Wu-Tang's influence on you, either as a fan or as an artist?
Major. Major, major. Man, fucking major. Like, I'm from New York, man. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I'm from New York. I have a Snow Beach jacket that Raekwon wore in 1993. I was a fucking, you know what I mean, baby, nigga. And I got one. I got an original one, too, not the fucking...
I've seen that. On your website. You know I've seen that shit.
I almost used that photo for our social media.
So, you know, can you really discuss hip hop culture and not at this point? Like, what part of it is not touched by Wu-Tang's influence at this point?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's that. There's just like so many moments in my youth, childhood, teenage years, whatever, that there was some Wu-Tang shit. I was at ODB's wake, man.
Mm.
Oh, shit.
A lot of rappers can't say that shit. If they was there, I ain't seen them.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So, I'm from Brooklyn. A lot of the Wu low-key cornerstone members, their roots, their family, some of them personally are from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You know, they represent Shaolin because they moved there. Yeah. But a lot of them is from Brooklyn, including Old Dirty Bastard.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah, that shit is all over my fucking hip-hop tree. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, come on, man, Supreme Clientele. It's just, oh my God. It's just like I said that and I had a whole flashback of like early smoking weed. Like, so, you know, yeah, it's all over my shit, man. Just their command of the language, I think also is I don't know if that, I don't know if it's overlooked is the word. I think it's worthy of study. It's worthy of damn near academic study.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
You know, and I'm not just talking about jizzing in some room, you know, no shade, but it's like, I had an argument, not an argument, a debate with Homeboy Sandman. Y'all know Homeboy Sandman?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
I had a debate with Homeboy Sandman one time on a long car ride to a gig, and he was telling me that Raekwon wasn't saying nothing, and I was like,
oh, we about shit. To fight.
It don't make no sense. He was like, I was like, you kidding me? I was like, don't make me pull out the fucking Cliff Notes for you real quick, man. We was debating that shit for like an hour, man. I was like, you completely bugging out. Mind you, I love Homeboy Sandman. That's one of my favorite people on earth. That's one of the That's a generational talent. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But we definitely about to argue about some hip hop. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I was like, you completely tripping. And I gave him an example, just on some language shit, right? You know, first of all, they call guns. You got to know Wu-Tang shit, right? They be calling guns God jewels sometimes in the verses, right? But I don't even know if they did that on purpose, but just peep how deep the Wu world is, right? They be calling guns God jewels, but God jewels backwards is you God, right? Who they called Golden Arms, who I believe sold guns. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's that whole shit, right? Yeah. And then Ghost has a line where he says, but he's like, bursts out the place with the Gaju heater from Stark's Heat Zaria, right? And I was telling Sam, man, I was like, dog, the suffix eria in Latin-based languages means store, right? Carniceria is a meat market in Spanish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pizzeria is a pizza store. He called that shit a heat-zeria. That's a gun store. I was like, that's amazing, man. It's fucking amazing. You gonna tell me they not saying nothing? Come on, man. Jesus.
Yo, but what does Ghost say? What's that fucking quote that people always quote that Ghost says? It's, like, I don't care if you understand it. It's fucking art.
Yeah. You don't have to understand it, right?
Yeah, but see, but that's how deep the subconscious mind is, that the shit do make sense, though, right?
Yeah,
and
it
that
does.
Interview, I think the timing of that interview is after Supreme Clientele, because he also talks about going to Africa for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
And how that, like, he caught, like, a different frequency. And it's apparent on the record, yo. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He did, yo, he literally did what all of the 19th century and early 20th century scholars from Europe did. They went to fucking Egypt. And they tapped in and they came back like some kind of fucking guru talking about they know some shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He went to Africa and was like, oh shit. He downloaded some shit and came back like, yo, scientific. You know what I'm saying? I was like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So to hear that as a youth is like, it's mind blowing shit, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So you're talking about the brilliance of the Wu, the lyrical prowess, the layers on layers, and then on the W they like open things up to non-Wu members for the first time, and
sorta, but we'll get into that.
Okay, yeah, I'm curious about that. I know for myself, like at the time, I was like, I don't know how I feel about that. But I'm wondering for you, like, what was the anticipation like when you knew that there was going to be non-Wu members on it?
I didn't. Okay. I didn't encounter that record that way.
Okay.
That, you know, and that's why I think it's such a slept on record. By that time, the W came out. If you were a Wu fan, you kind of were still enamored, you know what I'm saying, by Wu-Tang Forever, which came out a few years before that. But
97.
It was the last, yeah. It was the last Wu-Tang record before the W.
Yeah.
Right? And on Wu-Tang Forever, they was already like, you ain't going to get this till the year 2000 or whatever, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And maybe that was true, you know, so people were still that. And I feel like it was a double album, I think. And it was like an enhanced CD. They was doing shit way ahead of the game. He was online on that fucking record. They was bugging out.
Yeah.
Right. And then the W comes out. But here's the thing. If you listening to Wu and you listening to all of the solo albums and all of that, can you really say that Redman and Nas are not part of the Wu-Tang family? Mm. And the answer is no.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Redman Ben said he was honorary Wu, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, even if he didn't say that, look at his whole run with Method Man, right? Like, come on, right? So I dare say that he helped make Method Man a more precise MC.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Method Man might have affected Redman's live showmanship. Like, they, something was going on, right? And then Nas, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yo. We're going to get to that record in this record, but you get some of the best of Nas rhyming with Raekwon on multiple records. They're on multiple records together, and when they're on records together, that's something special.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, now granted, you got Snoop on there, but look what record Snoop is on, yo, with ODB. Like, it's deep, yo. I think it's very thought out, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just ill. You got Dirt Dog with Snoop Dogg on a record, man. You know,
yeah.
Very interesting stuff on that record.
even the Monument doesn't sound like too crazy with Busta on there.
Nah, it's funny. I was re-listening to that earlier today, and I almost forgot like how that's a banger. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And none of the collaborations feel forced. Like in that mm-hmm. description of it being like a record that was the first to feature non-Wu members, etc. You would think almost that it was some kind of force, and none. Junior Reed sound like he's supposed to be on that record. Isaac yeah. fucking Hayes sound like he's supposed to be on that record. And now what's the weight of that record now? You know what I'm saying? Like how many rappers could be like, yo, Isaac Hayes, that ain't a sample, bro.
Yeah, that's...
He in the video.
Right.
He in the
video. Yeah, he's
bro.
On it.
You know what I'm saying?
I think that was my issue with like hearing that there were non-Wu members on it before I actually listened to it, was I was like expecting a big departure that like didn't really happen. For the most part.
Nah, not at all. In fact, that record might be closest to the Wu formula than a bunch of other ones. When mm-hmm. it started to become apparent that there was discord in some mm-hmm. way in their group. Mm-hmm. But on that record, man, there's like a lot of classic Wu elements done executed really well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This record is really good. I'm not gonna front. I didn't really listen to it before. No. Just never have. Like Cavi, you were talking about like hip hop albums that you haven't heard, you know, like this one is just one that just fell under the radar. I mean, minus the like yeah. the singles and stuff, but it's good.
Is it?
Wait, it's good.
Are you saying you didn't listen to this album until having to prepare for this episode?
That's what I'm saying.
Wow.
Okay. That actually makes me really happy. That makes me really happy, actually.
Yeah.
Now it's new for you. And we get to like talk about it in this context. And I don't even think the singles are the best songs on that record.
The singles
sound like songs. It's funny. The singles sound like records they made to appease the label.
Yes.
For sure. Right? For
that,
sure.
They sound like that. But then I don't know if y'all seen the videos for this album. They almost brought it back to the Wu center by how they executed the visuals for even like the singles.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, they kind of brought everything back to their world. But yeah, the singles ain't even the best songs on that. And,
no.
and this shit got it like, it has just the right amount of tracks and a bunch of them are fucking like, you know, a bunch of them in a row are like, this could have been maybe a single or this would have been a strong mm-hmm. song to this audience. Like there's a bunch like in a row, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah. When I heard Careful for the first time, I was like, shit.
Yeah, dog.
That's it. Yeah, like that's yeah. fucking Wu-Tang.
Yo,
all the way.
Up. Straight yeah. up. Straight up.
Careful. You know what I mean? Sorry, go ahead, Kev.
Oh no, I'm just getting hyped, man. Like the video for that is part of the video trilogy for Gravel Pit. You know, like they do mm-hmm. a whole sequence of videos that tie together with Bokeem Woodbine. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And Careful is part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Careful. There's like vintage Wu-Tang on here. I've also been thinking about how I feel like this is a time when RZA was starting to get some shit about his production, like changing or whatever. But there are some beats on this record that are just fucking amazing. Like Hollow,
classic Wu-Tang beats.
Hollow Bones.
Yes, yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Just think about like another in a line of like drumless RZA beats that are just way ahead of their time. Amazing.
And now everything is that. Now so many of these street rap records mm-hmm. are that. They're that formula. Like some type of gripping or menacing sample, no drums, right?
Yeah.
And look how long ago this record is over 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, nah. If anyone's saying this record is bad, I don't know if they really listen to it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's bad at all. I think it's yeah. really good.
It's incredible.
I can yeah. understand how. I don't even remember what the singles were. I know Gravel Pit was a single.
Gravel Pit
Gravel
was
Pit,
one.
Yeah,
so
sure.
yeah, if you listen to Gravel Pit and you're like, oh, this must be what the rest of the album sounds like.
I think it turned people off. The video was alienating too. The Flintstone themed video.
Yeah.
It had Wu elements in there. I think RZA was experimenting with something that would maybe have some type of crossover value, but I don't know. All I can do is speculate. I wasn't there. You
sure.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
But even that, it ain't a bad record. That's for sure. Like, it's funny looking back at it now. It's a very palatable single, and I don't even mean palatable in a way to like placate it. You know, it's like, nah, that shit is a solid record.
I fucking love that song. I don't care what anybody
yeah,
says.
It's a solid record. It's a very solid record.
There are traces of what Meth did on his second album on this project. Like, Do You Really? The song with Streetlife.
Do you really want do Thang Thang?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Thang Thang, right?
Like I listened to that this week and I was convinced like that track was supposed to be on to Cal 2000 and didn't make it for some reason.
That's a hot take. I could see that. But he almost sounds more in his own, more in his shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The fact that it wasn't produced by the RZA and that Street Life is on it just made me think oh man, I bet that was left over from.
Yeah, but it still fits on the record too. Yeah. Something about it still fits on the record for sure. And Meth is just so consistent, and he doesn't miss a beat on this record. You know, on the W album.
Yeah.
Nah.
I'm trying to think. Oh, Let My Ends Live. Oh my God. That muddy, distorted bass on that track. That's right, y'all. Gucci jumper, X5 getting more egg. Let my niggas live. We show and prove, get paper. Catch me in the caper on shrooms, yo. Let my niggas live. We real niggas, that's God body. Challenge anything, make major moves. Let my niggas live. We giants, live off the land lions. Post with iron, no crying rolls. Let my niggas live. Hey, yo, let my niggas live. Handle your big kill, no kids. Scream at the mirror, curse, asking God, why me? Running the black church, gun in my hand, y'all try me. I'm God's son, son of man, son of Marcus Garvey. Rastafari, Ari, Hell, Ali, Selassie. Police are trying to break us, but the streets raised us. It takes mortal metal bars, we destined for ours. I hear murder plans from dope fiends with elephant hands. Snots in they nostrils, the blocks is hostile. There's no pasta pissing, Glocks is spitting. Rocks cooking, underground body stiffing. Cops looking bird shit, drop on the window pane. The oxygen is cocaine, it drove lots of men to die with no name. I've been on boats, nut down throats, pee on bitches who famous. Pretty dick, put stitches in the anus. I'm the animal that Hugh Hefner created. The only nigga shot they dated. The most hated Nas, nigga.
So that song, right? That song is the song I have the most memories with. And that song, that might be the record. That really might be the record that made me understand the importance of the W as an album. Because I think that might have been my real entry point to the record for real. You know what I mean? I'm a Nas fan. They wild out on that record, yo. And that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about with Nas and Raekwon when they get on a track together, when they get in a room together. First of all, it's clear that they really respect one another as MCs. They're not, but it's complimentary too, right? Like when Nas is rapping with AZ, you're almost getting like the Wonder Twins, right? And that's no discredit to AZ, but it's more saying like AZ is Brooklyn's stalwart that could hold, that could spar with Nas. You know what I mean? They have a lot of synergy when they get on a track that fans enjoy. But with Raekwon, they're different. You know what I'm saying? They're doing different styles, but the way them shits is hitting, you know, it's not that they're so disparate, but they're uniquely different, and yet they are. They're complementary and they're almost fueling each other. But that record, and Nas goes bananas on that record. There's a part where he runs out of breath and they keep it in the track. You know what I mean? He runs out of, it's almost like he was saying it so forcefully, but it's the type of thing that I think in another situation, a rapper or artist might have punched it in the vocal recording and they left it raw like that. He's like, the blocks is hostile. Like that, and they leave it like that because that's how fucking forceful it was. He goes crazy in that verse, man. Both of them do, but Nas like, oh, you gonna feature me on the Wu-Tang album? I bet. Watch this. And Redman did the same thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think the first time I noticed how well Nas and Raekwon work well together, complement each other, is Eye for an Eye.
Eye for an Eye.
I
think they both on the Freakin' You remix for Jodeci too, I think.
Was Nas on that?
No. That might be Ghost and Ray. There's another joint.
Verbal Intercourse.
Verbal Intercourse.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like Nas's verse on the W is somehow connected to Verbal Intercourse. Just in the way that he's using euphemisms. Just blew me away. I was listening to it today.
I scream at the mirror, curse, asking God, why me? Running a black church, gun in my hand, y'all try me. I'm God's son, son of man, son of Marcus Garvey, Rastafari, Ivy, Hill, Holly, Salah. I know that, yo, I've been rapping that verse since I was a kid, man. And Nas went out of, he went insane on that.
He did.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty dick putting stitches in the anus. Come on, man.
That only nigga Sade dated the most hated Nas, and I believe him.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's true.
That to That's me true. Also is like a, it just also reminded me of Live at the Barbecue when Nas was just like saying wild shit.
Yeah.
And he's doing it again.
When I was 12, I went to hell for snuff.
Yeah.
Nas went, he went all the way in, man. He also, that track is also like a two-man relay race. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because the hook, Raekwon is brilliant at these long hooks, like these 8-bar hooks that are almost like a mini verse in themselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mini bag of shrooms, arm's length. Like, you know, just like, you know. Oh my God. So he ends and it's like, it's almost like he did like this, and Nas grabbed the baton and just started fucking, oh man. Amazing. Amazing shit on that track, man. Amazing. That's you know, come on, man. You gotta have one of those. If you rap for real, you gotta have one of those tracks where people are like, damn, he fucking the juggernaut right there. You can't stop him.
Yeah.
I appreciate that little shout out to Philly on Red Bull.
That's the joint with Redman.
Yeah.
Yo.
I wasn't expecting that. I was just like, okay.
Listen, man. Redman runs a clinic on that album in his verse.
Yeah.
He's kind of... And, but that's the thing. I don't think that's Redman's only Wu-Tang moment. So that's why I was like, yo, people really got to understand. It seems like the features for this record were really carefully selected.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you're talking about a year in rap, and at the time of their fame, the features could have gone a completely different direction.
Yeah.
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 You know what I'm saying?
You're right. Like we've been talking about recently a couple of Philly albums, Freeway's debut and The Becoming by Beanie Siegel. And like, this was a time in rap music when labels were like throwing random people from other parts of the country into these East Coast records, like trying to get a larger audience, you know, like Bun B Nelly, and that did not happen on this Wu-Tang record.
Nope. It's actually every feature is the epitome of veteran or like established in their craft, especially Junior Reed and Isaac Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, I've never heard them talk about Snoop. I'm sure they have, but I can't imagine. I mean, I'm sure they respected the shit out of him.
Yeah, but it's also ill where he's on the record, where he is.
Right.
Like, I think it was quite remarkable that he's on the record with ODB.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I thought that was really ill. And
yeah.
And maybe I'm doing a disservice by just being like, I think it's ill. But, you know, you got somebody who's probably the smoothest and most recognizably smooth voice in hip-hop, right?
Mm-hmm.
With someone who's like the freest,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
On the same record. Yeah, man, it's just dope, man.
Yeah, that juxtaposition. It's kind of brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's like, of course that's the record that Snoop will be on. It almost makes like, oh, that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I don't know about y'all, but to this day, sometimes I'll be taking a shower and conditioning my hair and be singing that hook to myself.
Conditioner. Yeah, man, it's a great record, man. And I think that might be the last ODB feature.
I think it could be, yeah.
You know what I mean? On the Wu-Tang album, at least while living.
Right, yeah.
Something like that. Something like that.
Yo, I just got to say this about the RZA. On Careful, he says, "Father, you see King Police." And for the longest time, I was like, why did he say that? Like, what? Mm-hmm. I don't know where that came from. I mean, I guess it's one of the things that like makes Wu-Tang like so unique. Like you were saying earlier about like the words they use in language. But I just remember being so confused by that. Father, you seen King Police? Like, I know he's saying. Like,
and you all I need. But the man was like, plus you got the good power you, for real.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But power you means pussy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right.
Right. And it was an ill way to highlight the 5% of slang, but make the point without being crass.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Okay. And RZA kind of did something similar with that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
They just had their own language.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Kev, I'm incredibly grateful. Thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed this conversation. We're both looking forward to the new record. Is there anything you want folks to know? Like, can we talk about when the record's coming out? Does the record have a title? What do you want to tell folks about the record?
Sure. The record is called Different Type Time. Not a different type time, just different type time.
Mm-hmm.
The record's coming out this spring, pretty soon. The date, I believe, will be announced in the next couple of weeks. I'm not sure how close to real time this broadcast will be, but right now we're at the end of February, right? I don't know if I can should say that, but
yeah, no, it's cool. This will be coming out on the 6th, March 6th.
Okay, yeah. So by then, I believe the date will be announced.
Okay,
and it won't be a super long wait post this being made available. It's called Different Type Time. It features a lot of producers, that some who were named in my recent Twitter thread. You know, Quelle Chris does the cornerstone of the record. Obviously, we have a long working chemistry, and yeah, he's produced a bunch of songs, a bunch of moments on the album. Wino Willie has a couple tracks on there. Obliv has a track on there. Ali has a track on there. Malik Abdul-Rahman has a track on there. It's Fasho from Dallas. He's on there. A lot of people who are key members in this broader beat community that we all celebrate contributed to making this record. Ruffy and Kicks. So many. This great producer from LA named Glass City. I think people are going to be more tuned into them when they see, like, he has one of the bigger songs on this record. Child Actor that I was able to meet through recent affiliations with Backwoods, and I'm not sure if it was Quelle that first sent me the batch of beats from Child Actor, but that was one of those beautiful moments. That the record we have on the song we have on this record is one of my favorite songs I might have ever made. But then from that, you know, I have a whole bunch of songs coming down in the future from with Child Actor too. So just through this process, being able to work with all of these different amazing people and move around the country and make this project, that's been a big it's just a big part of the record. I'm known to pull up, you know what I'm saying? I pull up in people's cities. I'll pull up on them offline, you know, before I hit them on Twitter. I'll be like, all right, well, I'm in Philly right now. Like, that's really good. You know what I mean? And, you know, that was a key part to making this record, too, was the ability to really physically show up and connect and create and record in certain places and spaces. So I really hope people tune into that. It's birthed from me reconciling the feelings that I spoke about earlier about this binge watch culture and the demand it puts on creatives, and the process of wondering, you know, what does that mean for me as an artist? And what does that mean about the art that I'm delivering if it's only motivated to satiate that? Like, especially as an artist who people have celebrated for my authenticity and intention, like E mentioned, right? So I had to reclaim my space, my process, and I realized that I wasn't at the mercy of that I'm on a different type time, you know, and that's at the core of the record. So, you know, one person told me they saw things related to this record that had, you know, someone who had early access to the record, and it's the whole thing, you know, the visual audio components of it, and they were like, this is confusing to someone who came from the future and found this, because they wouldn't know what period it came from. You know, and I thought that was really interesting. You know, so, you know, by the time this comes out, I think more people will be aware. There's a toll-free number connected to this release, you know what I'm saying, that will be in the public domain by the time this is broadcasted, right? So when, as that toll-free number gets announced, it's an opportunity for people to hit me up, you know what I'm saying? They can leave a voicemail, they can they can send a page with their phone number to this number if they want to get, you know, more exclusive access. And I literally get paged on a pager when they hit that number and do that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's 2024, and I'm telling you, hit me up on the pager. That's how you know it's real. And I'm really about to get that, you know? So there's many levels of, like, me just being like, nah, they don't tell us the timeline. The artist actually makes the timeline. Like, so much so that it affects the earth down to the climate. Like, we do that. The robots don't do that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of the spirit of this record. You know, there's people ask me who was featured on the album. There are none. There are no rap features on the record at all. There's 21 tracks. There's no rap. Let me rephrase that. There are two rap features. Let's say three. There's three rap features, actually. Two are from unhoused men who stopped me in the street in two different cities on the same day and rapped for me.
Mm.
If anyone could believe that I was in Detroit in the afternoon and a man that I didn't know was unhoused struck up a conversation with me and then rapped for me. And then I left Detroit and went to Dallas. And that evening in the street in Deep Ellum, a man approached me and said he knew me. I did not know him. He said, "You rap." I was like, "Okay." He said, "You got to give me that pain." And then he proceeded to rap for me for like 8 minutes. So he's on the record. He's on the record, and that gentleman in Detroit is on the record. So those are the two rap features. Other than that, there's a moment that's like a found moment. It's an archived moment from a rapper that many people may have forgotten about, but that I didn't. And this is a found recording of him rapping for people in the street. And it's like 1997.
Wow.
When he did it. You know what I'm saying? So those are the rap features. That's it. Other than that, the features are singers.
That's incredible.
It is incredible. You know? Man. I don't even know what to say. I'm at a loss for words, other than, you know, can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, man. I'm excited. I really, just give it a chance more than anything. I mean, we give crazier shit a chance. We give fucking high fructose corn syrup a chance. We give fucking stevia and shit. We give all that other shit a chance. You know, I'm not begging. I'm not soliciting. But I think if you're checking for it, yo, fuck with it. You know what I mean? That's what's in there, you know, in a nutshell.
It's like you said earlier, it's not going to hurt you. It's not going to hurt you.
It ain't. It definitely ain't hurting nobody. I didn't murder anybody, you know? Yeah. I don't think so. I'm like, did I murder anybody on the record? I didn't murder nobody in real life, so I'm not murdering nobody on the record. Maybe it's a metaphorical, you know? But I'm not making murder music and shit, you know?
Right.
Shout outs to murder music, though. I ain't mad.
Can we expect you to go back out on the road to support the album?
Yes. I'm going to be on tour with Rap Ferreira from May 1st through May 18th.
Nice.
We hit up 11 cities, I believe.
Philly being one of them. Johnny Brenda's May, I can't remember the date, but
5th.
I know you're coming and I'm
May 5th.
I'm planning to be there. May 5th.
Yeah, I don't remember all the cities. But I know it's predominantly the Midwest and Northeast, I believe, with the exception of when he makes return to Nashville, which I feel like is his home base.
Yeah.
And that just got announced today. I knew about it before today, but they formally announced like the dates and a lot of the tickets today. So that's happening, and that'll allow me to reach heads in other cities. And that's what the Arm & Hammer and Quelle Chris tours did for me leading up to this point. So I'm super excited about that. And it's a lot of cities that I've never been to.
Nice. Well, a lot to look forward to. Well, again, Kev, thank you so much for your time.
No doubt, man. Thank y'all, yo.
This has been great.
Sure.
And I hope folks will check out the record for sure.
Yeah, yo.
All right. This has been The Next Movement, folks. Thank you for listening. Peace.
Yo, Mensa for pot dealers and dot healers, conscious of they menses. Former Cosby kids, now Millie Rock Pop. Interlock theories, family dollar props, I'm hot. In every hood, really Salmon with the L Lab now. We good, feel me? It was Phillies when I was snot nosed. Now, past the priest and I'm chief and holding a matcha I cop. Off no string, it's a lot to digest. The rise of the planet of the primary suspects. The decline of 9X, the fly lord of the flies. My street clothes, Aztec, I'm betting on black. Masterpiece on NASDAQ, the pecking order snap. Masterpieces on wax press, but not Madame Tussauds. Too hard for the boudoir set. The gang's a name brand, the B flagship. You in the can, cause your catchphrase leaks sank ships. You on demand, it's a setup. The farther you get, the tighter the tether. It's not that it all went left, it went meta.
It's meta. It ain't left, it went meta. Yo, it's meta. It ain't left, it went better.